We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky coming to you from my heated attic.
You're heated.
Yeah, I didn't really intend to heat it, but it is. It is. And I can't run the air conditioning because otherwise the noise, you'll hear the noise on the recording.
Oh, no. Yeah. So that explains the Hawaiian shirt. At least you're dressed appropriately.
<That's right. laughs> And I'm splashing water on myself all the time. And who do I have with me? You're probably in a nice air-conditioned office, aren't you?
I am the more comfortable, although probably less charismatic, part of Wrestling with the Basics, Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark, coming to you from my 72-degree office at Ascension Lutheran Church in South St. Louis.
We are wrestling with the basics. We've kind of dedicated this month of July to Major League Baseball, America's pastime. And last week we read you again, thank you to Jill for sending us this holy humor, inspirational wit and cartoons book. And we read a couple of anecdotes, about, religious activity amongst baseball players. But I have a serious one. I know we usually start with something humorous, but I want to start with the serious one because last week we brought up the issue of praying. How does God decide who wins a game when both teams are praying to him, right?
Yep.
And I thought Joe Garagiola, again, who we love Joe Garagiola at Wrestling with the Basics because he was a Cardinals catcher. And we love the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm sorry, we're biased. We love all baseball teams. But how can you live in St. Louis and not be a Cardinal fan?
I know it. Yeah.
So anyway, here's how Joe Garagiola answered that question about praying for a victory. He says, did I pray when I played? Yes, I think most players did, usually during the national anthem. For me, it was a time to meditate. A quiet moment when I could ask God to keep me from injury and let me do my best. I think most players today ask for the same things. I can easily understand how players, coaches, and fans occasionally let a prayer slip out for that base hit that'll win the World Series or a field goal that'll win the Super Bowl. But when it comes to a strikeout, an error, or a slump being God's will, then I think he's taking Yogi Berra's advice and just watching the game. I just can't believe with all the problems available to him, God is worried about whether a baseball player strikes out or a football player catches a pass. Besides, if prayers really help the teams win, clubs like the Saints, the Cardinals, the Padres, and the Friars would have the edge. Take care of your own, right? And then Garagiola goes on to say that he thinks God is most likely to be in the loser's locker room. He's with those who are suffering, right? So I just thought that was some kind of a nice comments there from Joe Garagiola.
Yeah.
A Hall of Fame ball player and also a Christian, too, as well.
Oh, that's pretty neat, John. Yeah. And God is even, he can pay attention to the ball game. He does hear the prayers of ball players, I'm sure, but yet I'd like that closing comment about the in the locker room of the losing team. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Good reminder for all of us. He's always with us. He's with us in our victories. And see, that's the thing in the victories. You can't say for sure he's with you. Well, except that, of course, God's with us always. Mm-hmm. But certainly when you're having struggles, because the Bible's really, really clear about that the people that are having struggles and trials, those are the people that he's especially with to encourage and strengthen. And in fact, see, I didn't even think about this, man. We plan this all, if we'd only plan it out, we don't. It just happens because you want to talk about a guy that's having troubles, right?
Yeah, this is the perfect lead-in, John.
He's in, He's in the losing locker room. That's where he's at.
Yeah. If Elijah was on a ball team today, 2025, it would be the Colorado Rockies. worst record in the league right now, I think. So that's what he feels like, at least. Elijah feels like he is on the losing team, that he is all alone, that perhaps the Lord isn't listening to his prayers at all. And that's where we're going to pick up today in 1 Kings chapter 19. All right, good. If you're listening along and you want to, you can follow along in 1 Kings chapter 19. But we want to talk a little bit about Elijah, and he feels like a loser, and he feels alone, certainly, in this account. So just to kind of set the scene, when you think of Elijah, John, what kind of big accounts come to mind in the prophet's life? When you think of Elijah, anything come to mind?
Well, I mean, the one that comes to my mind immediately is, of course, the big showdown at the those two altars. They're making sacrifices to Baal. And, of course, Elijah's making sacrifices to God. So it's kind of like Elijah against all the prophets of Baal. That's the one that would come to my mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. I think that's what a lot of us would think of. Mount Carmel and the showdown, two altars, right? One to Baal and one to the Lord, to Yahweh. And the one who sends down fire, he is God. And remember all the prophets of Baal, the 450 prophets of Baal, they dance around and cut themselves and call on Baal, and there's nothing. No one answers, no voice, no action, nothing. Just the opposite with Elijah.
And of course, it has one of my favorite verses in the Bible where Elijah says, you know, maybe your God went out to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised it's one of your favorites, John? No, because it is funny because Elijah joins in the mocking and starts to mock these guys. Well, why don't you cry it a little louder? Maybe Baal can't hear. Maybe he's in the bathroom. Yeah, and that's literally what the Hebrew says there in the Old Testament. And maybe he's relieving himself. That's great. And then just the opposite with Elijah, the Lord sends down fire and it consumes the sacrifice, the altar, the water around the altar, everything. But then after that, I think we usually stop there, right? Especially when we're teaching our Sunday school lesson. But Elijah orders that the prophets of Baal be slaughtered. And so they seized them. They brought them down to the brook of Kishon and slaughtered them there. And that's how the account ends. So you can imagine what Ahab and Jezebel think about that. So they're the king and queen during this time when Elijah's prophet. So they're probably the most evil duo in the Bible when it comes to the Old Testament kings and queens, Jezebel in particular. And so Jezebel, who is a Baal worshiper, not a worshiper of the one true God, she is steamed that Elijah, this prophet, would kill her prophets, right? Those who followed Baal. So she is mad.
Because that's the thing. They're her prophets.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. She has personal ownership of this particular group of people. So of course she's upset. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's where today's reading picks up. After that takes place, we'll go ahead and just read today's reading. Okay, so John, if you want to read verses, I don't know, let's do verses 1-8. I know that's a lot of verses, but why don't we start there?
Okay. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets, that's her prophets, the prophets of Baal, with a sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. By the way, that's an ironic statement because that's exactly what's going to happen to her too, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway.
May the gods, like her gods or false gods, deal with me if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like one of them. So in other words, she's out to get Elijah. She's going to kill him just like he had killed those prophets of Baal.
And of course, Elijah, being the prophet of God, having just witnessed the miracle power of the Lord in consuming the altar and everything, he's just a coward. Wouldn't you think? You'd be a little more courageous and brave. But the text goes on to say, then he was afraid, which I love because that's the way I am so many times, even though God has shown his power in my life. Then he was afraid and he arose and he ran for his life. and yeah. came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I'm no better than my father's." And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you." And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Yeah. So, yeah, some great insights here. So, yeah, first of all, Jezebel's out to kill him, out to get him. And, you know, you wonder, you know, what is, after seeing the mighty acts of God, right? Just having this showdown on Mount Carmel. It's undeniable. Yeah. The Lord is God. Yet what does Elijah do? He runs for his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we even have that detail. He's even afraid. He's afraid and he runs for his life. You know, when you think back on Elijah's life up to this point, you know, he seems like he's pretty brave, right? Brave in the Lord. The other thing is, again and again, it's the Lord leading him. You know, Elijah, go here. Elijah, speak this. Thus says the Lord. And now this is a point where Elijah does his own thing, right?
Yeah.
He's afraid. He decides to run off, and he runs south there all the way to Beersheba. And he's kind of taking matters into his own hands rather than trusting the Lord or looking for the Lord's guidance here. And then he prays. We're just talking about prayer, right?
But what a prayer, though.
Yeah, what a prayer. What's his petition there, John, in his prayer?
Yeah, just take my life. I'm no better. And you have to admit, there's maybe some truth to that. Maybe he's experienced a little guilt. Maybe he knows he shouldn't be running away in fear, that he should be trusting the Lord. So there might be some honest repentance there, that I'm just like the fathers that came before me.
I think you're right, John, because he says, "I'm just like the fathers that have come before me. And I am no better than my ancestors," right? Yeah. So what ancestors do you think he's talking about? What forefathers is he talking about?
You tell me.
Yeah, I think, you know, we could probably go all the way back to Adam and Eve, right? The first, you know, the ancestors of everyone and their sin. But I'm thinking probably those who were Israelites, and especially perhaps those who were in the wilderness, those who were on their way to eat to the promised land, and, you know, how they grumbled and complained before the Lord time and time and time again. And Elijah probably recalling that. You know, just suffice it to say he's no different than his ancestors. That's not a good thing. He's recognizing, as you said, his fallenness. He's recognizing that his imperfection here. And you wonder, if part of this is, you know, fear, certainly, but also now as he runs away, this realization that, oh, boy, I'm no better than the ancestors before me. I'm just as sinful, I have just as much lack of trust in the Lord. Take my life. So I think that is kind of interesting. You know, he's running away to save his life, and yet his petition is, take my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And perhaps it's just that he wants to put his life into the hands of the Lord, and rather than Jezebel. I don't want Jezebel to murder me. I don't know what nasty thing she's going to do to me. But Lord, you go ahead and take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors, my forefathers. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that God doesn't argue with him.
That's true. Yeah, well, that's true. He's not like, "Oh, you're not so bad, Elijah." No, he doesn't. No, God doesn't argue with him. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
In fact, I love that phrase, "Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you."
Yeah.
You are right, Elijah. You cannot handle this. However, I don't think taking your life is the solution we need. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Lord doesn't argue with him, doesn't say, "Oh, you're not so bad." But he does say, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you.
Yeah.
I think that's, I really like that. Boy, that could be a sermon, right, John?
Yeah.
The journey is too great for us. So, during the times when we're on the losing team, when it feels as though the world is against us, when there are those times when we realize our own sin, as Elijah does here too, and we're convicted of it, the journey is too great for us. This journey of life, this journey to the promised land is just too much for us. If it was too much for Elijah, the prophet of God, guess what? It's going to be too much for us too, and for us to realize that. So knowing that it's too much for Elijah, you know, what does God do then for Elijah? He provides for him, right? So this angel comes, and I love this too, how this angel comes, and what does the angel do? The angel touches Elijah and says, get up and eat. And then he sees this bread that was baked and this jar of water. It seems to just appear out of nowhere. Get up and eat. And then he eats, and then Elijah takes a nap, it seems.
Yeah, yeah.
The angel of the Lord gets up a second time. Get up and eat. The journey's too much for you. So knowing the journey's too much for Elijah, God provides what's needed for the journey. A little snack and a nap in Elijah's case provides what he needs for the journey. And, think of the parallel to our lives. The journey's too much for us, but God doesn't leave us. He comes to us, and he provides for us exactly what we need for the journey. So that might not be a jug of water and some bread baked over coals for us, although he does provide for our daily needs, no doubt about it. He gives us our daily bread, and that's no small thing. But he also provides for those needs of our spirit, too. And we think of the provisions most clearly in worship, right? He provides us with his word, provides us with baptism, provides us with the Lord's Supper, where we do eat and drink and we're strengthened for the journey ahead. Because I think, yeah, when we do come to worship, I know I feel like that sometimes. I feel worn down and beaten, and, you know, I think about how I failed throughout the week. And yet God comes to us and he gives us what we need for the journey. He strengthens us. He touches us, provides for us, and gives us what we need.
And what I always was impressed with this story is that it's not a miracle. Well, I mean, it is that you're out in the under a broom tree in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, there's bread and there's a drink. I'm not denying that. But it's not a big, spectacular thing. And I think that's what we need to remember when we are feeling down. It's the little things that God gives us. It's actually the little things we need to strengthen us to keep going. And sometimes it is just the little things. A wife who will come up and give you a hug. Oh, wow, that's actually all I needed, was just to know that there's somebody out there that cares for me. And like you said, that's what I love about our worship, too. It's not that we come and we see some miracles or wonders or signs, but it's these little things. It's the eating and drinking, again, as you said, of the body and blood of the Lord's Supper. The pastor who has concern for us and gives us some words of comfort and encouragement. And I hope every pastor out there knows that. Everybody who comes to your church, a lot of those people are struggling, and they just need you to remind them of God's love for them. But yeah, I'd say that's what I think is neat, because we, in our weakness, we need some big signs, some big wonder for us. And you don't really, because it doesn't help, as we've already seen with Elijah. He had the big wondrous sign, did not help him at all. It's the little things that God gives us, both in our physical needs and certainly, as you alluded, in our spiritual needs. That's what will really get us up so that we can continue the journey. Although, yeah. I want to say real quick too, Matt, see, I think that's the key of this story. That's what people don't understand. They think we go to church so that we can feel bold and confident. I think part of the reason we go to church is to remember, no, what God requires of us is way more than we can do. But that's okay, because what's impossible for man, all things are possible for God. And that's what we do. We turn to the Lord.
Exactly. The recognition, the journey is too much for us. Yeah. And, you know, just God's patience with Elijah, too. You know, he was afraid. He did run away. And those aren't good things necessarily, but God doesn't leave him. He still comes to him. And it's not just an angel, John, but it's the angel of the Lord that comes to him. Did you see that? So, I mean, when we hear that phrase used in the Old Testament, you know, it's more than just an angel. It seems pretty clear that this is God himself. You know, we say Jesus, the pre-incarnate Christ. So, you know, before Jesus is even in Mary's womb and born on Christmas, you know, this is Jesus in the Old Testament showing up, you know, the Son of God showing up. And, you know, again, even in his fear, the Lord comes to him, comes to him. And it seems as though the Son of God, even himself, comes to him. Yeah. What great love.
And I know there is some argument about that. There are some that would suggest maybe it's not Jesus, but I agree with you. It always seems like it fits really well that this is the pre-incarnate Christ, as you said. Don't you love those big theological terms? So yeah, it's Jesus who's coming. Because you see, it's the kind of thing that a Jesus would do, a very human, earthly, physical thing. Here's some bread to eat. Here's some water to drink. Because even in the pre-incarnate state, he knows what it is to be flesh and blood. And often that's all I need. Just give me a good donut.
Yeah. I think there's a meme out there somewhere, John, based on this text, and it's something like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that a snack and a nap can fix. And
there you go.
That seems to there be the go. Case, at least for Elijah. So that gives him what he needs for the journey. And then in Elijah's case, then he's going to go on this journey 40 days and 40 nights until he reaches Horeb. Horeb, another name for Mount Sinai, right? So that's where, so we see these parallels between Moses' life and Elijah's life. You know, Moses, 40 years in the wilderness, Elijah, 40 days. Both of them, Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai. And so, you know, and God's providing for both of them, providing for the daily bread of Moses along the way with manna and water from the rock and other ways too. And, you know, so we see this parallel too with these two servants of the Lord. Yeah. So, okay, you want to read verses 9 and 10?
Then Elijah came to a cave and lodged in it, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I, am left, and they seek my life to take it away."
Yeah, yeah.
Even I only, I'm sorry, I left that out. Even I only am left.
Yeah. You know, so God questions Elijah, "What are you doing here?" Right. And Elijah's reply is one of kind of woe and self-pity, it seems. And he says, "I'm the only one. I am the only one left. And now they're trying to kill me too." So no, is Elijah really the only follower of the Lord that's left?
No.
Well, no, he's not. However, before too hard on Elijah, you know, do we ever feel like that, right?
Yeah.
Do we ever feel like maybe we're the only ones left? You know, we're the only ones that serve the Lord. And maybe we do. And maybe it's in the workplace. Am I the only Christian here? Or maybe it's in the school hallways. You know, am I the only Christian here in my school? You know, the only one that's living out my faith and, you know, willing to say no to things that are not God-pleasing, right? And follow the Lord. And I think that, there's times when we feel that way. You and I, John, as pastors, we'll probably spend most of our time hanging out with Christians, not even just Christians, but Lutheran Christians, right? People that we serve in our congregations. But boy, for our members and of all ages out in the real world, I think very much have those times when probably it feels like, boy, am I the only one left out here? In the workplace, in the school, and wherever we may be. So I think we can resonate with that sometimes. But I think then we want to listen to God's reply to Elijah, and how does that reply also apply to us?
And I think what's neat here is, so he's still feeling sorry for himself, even after God has come, sent the food and the drink, and God remains patient. I think that's what we need to remember. Sometimes, we really do get stuck in our self-pity, and guess what? God just keeps stuck in his love and his mercy. He's just as stuck in that as we can be stuck in our self-pity. So how far do you want me to read, Matt?
Yeah, the steadfast love of the Lord that never ceases, you know, and we see this evident in Elijah's life. Let's read verses 11 through 13.
And let me reiterate that word, steadfast.
Steadfast.
That's the operative word. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What verses did you want me to read?
11 through 13.
All right. And he said, this is God speaking. And God said, "Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountain and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'"
Okay, so let's stop there for a second. So God makes himself manifest to Elijah, and he witnesses all these natural wonders, right?
Yeah.
The wind, the earthquake, fire. Now, can God appear in those things?
Yeah,
sure.
He does.
In fact, it's kind of interesting, John. There's examples in the Old Testament where he does. In Ezekiel 1, he's there and accompanied by the winds, a windstorm. In the book of Numbers, of course, we hear about earthquakes, right? And yeah. God swallowing up the people associated with Korah and his rebellion. Exodus 19, of course, we have God's presence in fire. But God, in this case, doesn't choose to appear to Elijah, make himself manifest in those ways. You know, how does he appear to Elijah? How does he make himself known to him? In a whisper, right? A whisper.
Yeah, yeah.
And, why do you think that is, John? You know, why in Elijah's case does God appear in a whisper?
Well, let me tell you this. You do not want to see the God who comes in an earthquake and a fire and all that. Because as the stories you related, those are stories of God coming to judge.
Judgment, right?
We want the still, small voice. That's what we want. It may not seem very impressive, but trust me, that's the thing that changes people's hearts, changes our hearts and our minds. So, that would be my thought.
Yeah, I think, just again, the steadfast love of the Lord, his compassion, and in Elijah's state of fear already, comes to him in a whisper, in a whisper.
But I think it's important to remind, he's reminding, I could come in a different way. And indeed, for the people that are opposing you, I can come in that way, but I'm not coming to you in that way. No, I would not, break a bruised reed or extinguish a dimly burning wick. Nope. So I'll come to you very, very gently in a quiet word. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, and again, how God reveals himself to us today, too. It's not always in a whisper, an audible whisper from the Lord. He doesn't promise that for us, but he does promise to come to us in his word, the written word, the proclaimed word. And that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, wonderful. All right, John, as we kind of wrap up today, God assures Elijah of one other thing, and let's skip down to verse 18. One other thing that the Lord assures Elijah of, if you could skip down there.
Okay. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him.
Yeah. So, one of Elijah's complaints was that he's alone. He's the only one left. Yeah. And God assures him too. No, Elijah, I've left 7,000 in Israel who haven't worshiped Baal, who are still followers of the Lord. And I think for us too, hopefully to take heart in, there's Christian community too. That there's others too who are followers of the Lord. Be strengthened by them, by their company, by their witness, by their words. And where can you find those followers of the Lord? Well, probably a church, I'm guessing. So, when you do feel alone, come to the Lord's house. Gather with brothers and sisters in Christ. Be encouraged as we encourage one another. In very tangible ways. That mutual conversation, encouragement of the brothers and sisters, that's such a gift from God. Yeah. Any last thoughts, John?
Just, I would like to say that's what Matt and I are here for. I mean, we do not know you personally, but I hope that the words we speak to you will encourage you, especially when you find yourself feeling like Elijah, that the Lord is definitely with you in love and mercy. And steadfastness, as you said, Matt. Thank you for listening to Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.